Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Some of the topics include what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature a stellar roster of special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about our organization and this radio program, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. This week I'm very pleased to have the author of a brilliant book entitled Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence. He is a physicist by the name of Jan W. Vandesande, and what's really brilliant is that he had his own personal experiences with the afterlife, so we're going to discuss the proof that he uncovered with his research, his experiences, and the writing of this book. Let's welcome to Toward the Light Mr. Jan Vandesande. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Juliet, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you, and I've really been enjoying reading your book. I wanted to ask you, well, let's start by your sharing experiences or what led to your interest in the afterlife and in the metaphysics and death and dying.
Okay. It's a long story, but it's worth talking about because some of these experiences are just fantastic, and that's why I had to write the book. When I was younger in college, most people at that age don't think about dying and death. I did it. Yeah, I did, and I was intrigued by it. But in those days, back in the 1960s, there wasn't that much to read. The literature was nothing like it is now, and it wasn't easy to get. Then when I went to South Africa to do my PhD, I went where I was at Cornell University, I did my master's, and I went to South Africa to do my PhD on diamonds, and there I met my wife Marlene. And Marlene was also interested in what happens after death and to see if we could communicate with our loved ones. So we initially started going to a few spiritualist churches where they had mediums on the stage giving messages. But we were never really very impressed or never really got, you know, really meaningful messages. And this is unfortunate. And maybe I should tell your listeners that it is not that easy to get very good messages. You know, oftentimes you get disappointing messages or no messages. But you have to keep on trying. That's what I definitely say to your listeners. Anyway, at one time when my wife and I, we went to buy some furniture at a little furniture store just across the university, from the university where I was doing my work. And we were in the store there, and we were buying some chairs and a table. And I happened to say, oh, these chairs are perfect for sitting in a little seance, because my wife and I, with some friends that we'd met at some of these spiritualist churches, we'd started a development circle to see if somebody could develop into a either trance medium or a channeler. And so we needed some more chairs. So the owner of the store, someone called Sarah Wolf, said, oh, you mean you sit in a circle? You know, thought we were big shots. So we said, oh, yeah, we sit in a developmental circle, and we're trying to develop ourselves to become mediums. And she said, oh, my husband, Mickey, and I, we have a circle. And so we were talking a little bit about it. And she said, well, would you like to come to one of our circles? And we said, oh, obviously. We were excited. She said, yeah, I'd love to. So about 2 weeks later, we went to Mickey and Sarah Wolf's house. And we were there with about 5-6 other people and Mickey and Sarah. And at 8 o'clock, we went into the seance room. And everything was totally dark, something we weren't used to, that the windows were totally sealed. There was a red light hanging there, and the door was closed and locked. There was no light at all when they turned the light off. So what happened was, we got on, we all sat around. Mickey and Sarah sat behind a curtain in the corner of the room, because they were the two mediums. And we, the five others and the two of us, my wife Marlene and myself, we sat in front of the curtain. And then the light was turned off. And then they normally ask you to sing a little bit, so we sang a little bit to get what they call the vibrations up. And then all of a sudden, an entity started speaking. and he introduced himself as Brian. And the voice came initially from behind the curtain, and it was Sarah in trance. And it's a very distinctive American accent, very distinctive voice. And I should say that for the next 8 years, we ended up sitting with Mickey and Sarah quite regularly, and that Brian came through every time, and every time exactly the same identical voice. Anyway, so he introduced himself, and he started talking to everybody and chatted and welcomed us. And he said hello, and he was pleased that we could actually come to the circle. So up until then, nothing spectacular has happened. And then all of a sudden, there in front of the curtain was what they call a trumpet or a megaphone. Remember, like these cheerleaders at football games with these megaphones or these trumpets? And these were about, I would say, a foot and a half high and has luminous paint on it. So spots and bands. So you could very clearly see it standing there. And all of a sudden, this trumpet started moving, started floating, and started flying around the room like a bee does. Up to the ceiling, into the corners, high, low, never hit anything. All of a sudden it would come up, tap me on the head gently, tap me on the knee, went to my wife Marlene, tapped her, went to the others, tapped the sitters. And it did that for several minutes, floating around. And my, of course, initial reaction as a scientist was, oh boy, Mickey or Sarah was gotten up from behind the curtain, took the trumpet and was waving it around. But then I said, wait a minute, they're not very tall, these people. So how can this trumpet fly around all the way to the top of the room, to the center, come and gently touch us? Now remember, this is all pitch dark, and we could see it because of the luminous paint. And then you think, wait a minute, in the pitch dark, how would they even know where we're sitting? You try in the pitch dark to try and tap somebody gently on the knee or on the head with one of these trumpets without bumping into others. Remember, there were about seven of us sitting there. So I started saying, maybe there is something to this. Then all of a sudden the trumpet just horizontally stopped in the center of the room, in front of the curtain, and a voice started speaking through it. This was Mady, one of the regular guides. And this guide started talking and gave a speech about the purpose of life and light and things like that. I don't remember exactly all the details. We were just too stunned to see all this happening. And when she was done, the trumpet would gently float down, and there it was, right in front, on the floor, in front of the curtain. Now, already you can imagine we were stunned. This is just unbelievable, because to see this in the dark. Now, there are a lot of magicians who claim, oh, they can do all of that, and I've even been challenged by a magician when I once mentioned this. He said, oh, I can do that, and I've always challenged them back. I said, well, if you can do it, I challenge you. Come on, we'll turn the light off right now. You come and touch everybody here, anybody in the room, on the head or on the knees, you come and do it. And no magician will ever take that up. Because, Juliet, think about it. How can you do that in the pitch dark? No way.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So that even the red light was turned off as well. Correct?
Yeah, the red light was turned off. It was pitch dark. It was only the trumpet, which we saw because of the luminous spots. So there's no way that can be done. As a scientist, plus I stuck my legs out. If anybody was walking around, they would have tripped over my legs. Then the next thing was, all of a sudden, that Brian's voice came again. But this time it didn't come from behind the curtain, but came from the outside and relatively high, at 6 feet high. Sarah was only about 5'2", 5'3". So there he was talking, and he told us he was talking in direct voice. Now, direct voice is something where you get the spirit entity speaking not through the medium, but the spirit entity speaking through an ectoplasmic voice box, as they call it. And the ectoplasmic voice box is formed by taking ectoplasm from the mediums and forming a little box, as they call it, a voice box, through which spirit entities can then talk. And Brian started talking to us through this voice box, and he wanted to demonstrate what direct voice was like. So that, again, stunned us. So you can imagine that evening, we were totally blown away to have that kind of experience where you see trumpets flying in the pitch dark, to have a trance medium, and to have direct voice all in the same evening. Now, we never saw the ectoplasmic voice box or the ectoplasm. That's all in the dark. And the reason for that is that ectoplasm is very light sensitive. This is material that comes from the medium. And it's been photographed back, starting back in the 1860s, 1870s, by...
I remember that, yeah.
Sir William Crookes. He's photographed ectoplasm. many people since then. Some Nobel Prize winners have photographed ectoplasm. A professor Richet in France, in 1923, he wrote a book and showing pictures of the ectoplasm he's photographed. And in my book, I have numerous pictures of ectoplasm, about 10 of them, all showing different forms of ectoplasm, how it comes from the medium, and eventually what it does is called materialization, which we can talk about in a few minutes. But this ectoplasm, has been analyzed. It's genuine. It has been, and it has been photographed. Now, of course, a lot of people say, oh, it's all fraud, this ectoplasm. Unfortunately, as happens in any field, there is fraud involved. When there's money involved, there's fraud involved.
And yes, there is.
As you know very well, Juliet, that unfortunately that happens.
Mm. It really makes me sad, too, when I was reading that in your book, how, people, for some reason in this field, because I'm a psychic medium as well, that people would just default to think, oh, this is all fraud or it's hocus-pocus or what have you. And, actually, there are quacks in every profession. And the medical profession, which has been accepted by people, is so full of that kind of stuff. And so I'm really pleased that more of us can come forward and disprove that.
Yeah. There is fraud, but that doesn't mean that every medium is fraudulent. And that's
exactly
what a lot of people seem to forget, that just because there are some fraudulent mediums who have been exposed, there are so many cases of mediums who are genuine, who have been, critically examined and never been found to be fraudulent. And a good example I can give is a medium called Alec Harris. He comes from Wales originally. Was born in about 1890. And the reason I mention Alec Harris is because he has connections with Mickey and Sarah, the mediums we sat with. Now, maybe I should first describe the ectoplasm we saw, and then I'd like to talk about Alec Harris, if that's okay, Juliet.
Yeah. Absolutely, and yeah. I also want to acknowledge a couple of mediums who I've been in touch with too, besides myself, who are really wonderful, a couple who are actually on BBS Radio, Mick and Sylvie Avery, and they're from the UK as well. He is a deep trance medium, and she's a physical medium, and their program is called Spirit Work. And it's just absolutely beautiful, and it's consistent, and you can feel the love coming through. And then Jane Roberts is another one who everybody, I think, would be familiar with at this point. She's the one who channeled Seth and the Seth material.
Yeah.
And, she's absolutely brilliant, too. I think she's transitioned now, but she was a sort of a skeptic at first and wasn't really in pursuit of this kind of thing. And then when it started happening to her, she realized, well, there's something to this.
Exactly. And there is so much good evidence. And that's why I eventually decided to write this book, because especially this whole ectoplasm materialization is a very tricky subject. There has been a lot of fraud. There were a lot of fraudulent mediums. But there were so many genuine mediums who've never, ever been shown to be fraudulent. May I just tell you how we first experienced this ectoplasm, and then I'd love to talk about Alec Harris, because that's just phenomenal.
Please.
Yeah. So we met this Mickey and Sarah, and we were just stunned, of course, that first evening. And we got to be very friendly with them. And by the way, they never charged us 1 cent. In all the 8 years we sat with them, never 1 cent. They never charged anybody. That's already a sign that people are genuine when you don't charge for anything. Then, so we got to be, became very friendly with Mickey and Sarah. And then we were invited again a few weeks later to come to another sitting. And this time they'd invited a professor from the university, a Professor Jack Allen. He was the professor of anatomy at the university where I was doing my PhD. And Professor Allen, he was already in his late 50s when we were in our 20s, but he was a tremendous guy, and he was invited also with his wife. And Jack had already been sitting in many circles, and he had actually seen full materializations. And we actually became very good friends with Jack and his wife. And then I'll talk about some of the pictures Jack took, which are in my book. But so we became friendly with Mickey, Sarah, Jack, and Lenchen, and we sat with them quite regularly. But one day, Mickey and Sarah said, look, we're going to have a treat for you, because everything is always in the dark with them, because they were not good enough mediums at that age. They were already in their late 50s. That that ectoplasm which they produced, but if there was light, it would hurt them or damage them. And that is because white light, you know, is energy, and it could damage the ectoplasm. But we have a treat for you. One of their friends, Kitty Gordon, Kitty and Max, who they've been sitting with for 30 years, she was a materialization medium. And she really stopped. She was already in her 60s. But they invited her one day, and she promised that she would come and do some ectoplasm demonstration. And Jack was there with his wife, myself, Marlene, my wife, with Mickey and Sarah. And this time we were lucky. We were allowed to turn the red light on. So we had the red light on in the room. Kitty, the friend, the medium, sat with Sarah and Mickey behind the black curtain. And the guides told us that when they were in trance, that we could open the curtain, turn the red light on, and then all of a sudden, we saw this white material coming out of Kitty's nose. It sort of oozed out of her nose, started flowing down her body and onto the floor. And you sit there and you say to yourself, wait a minute, this can't be happening. And then one of the guides spoke through Sarah and said to one of the sitters, pick up that ectoplasm that's lying on the floor, pick it up and pull it up and hold it up. And there he held it up about 5-6 feet high with his hand. And he was told to walk across the room another 5 or 6 feet. So he had this whole sheet of white ectoplasm. It looks like fine silk, something like that. It had a distinctive smell. I would describe it as sort of a smell, like almost like perspiration smell. But it was still tied to Kitty's nose. And there you see this material hanging there, being held up by one of the sitters in the red light, very clearly visible. Everybody could see it. There wasn't everybody was hallucinating or something like that. And then the guides told that sitter who was holding up the ectoplasm to drop it. He gently dropped it. It fell to the floor. And I would say within 2 or 3 seconds, it all went right back into Kitty's nose. And there, my wife and I sat there saying, we don't believe it. We couldn't believe what we had just seen. Now, this is just the first part of what they call materialization, is when the ectoplasm comes from the medium and pours out. Now, in my book, I've got some beautiful photographs in the book showing this ectoplasm. You have the book, so you see the pictures of this ectoplasm.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Yeah, and just real. These are genuine photographs. And the reason I know is because Professor Allen, after the sitting, said to us, Jan, he said, I was at a sitting, he said, about a year ago. That's before I was in South Africa, where he had taken photographs of a medium, a different medium he occasionally sat with. And he took some infrared photographs in the red light. And these photographs showed a medium, showed the ectoplasm from his nose forming sort of like a voice box on his shoulder. The other photograph shows the ectoplasm coming from his nose and covering his whole body, like we ourselves saw with the medium Kitty in that Mickey and Sarah circle. And then the next step, and this is what most people will not believe, is where this ectoplasm then forms into a person. So this person is all in white, because the ectoplasm is white, and this ectoplasmic person then starts talking to the sitters. I know this sounds very hard to believe, and a lot of your listeners might say, you know, this guy's nuts. But it is true, it has been photographed, and it has been witnessed and experienced by so many people. And this Professor
Allen. This is what's on the cover of your book, too. It looks like a turbaned man.
This is a full materialization on the cover of the book. Yeah. All in white. Now, some people are going to say, that's just somebody dressed up in the white sheets. Well, if you look very carefully, it's not just a white sheet. This is a meticulous gown and folds and creases. And the most fascinating part is if you look at the bottom, I don't know if you have the book handy, but if you look at the bottom.
I do.
You see at the bottom between his feet all that white stuff, and it even goes to the sitter who's standing there holding the hands of the ectoplasmic materialization, all that other white. That's all ectoplasm. Now, if you were going to dress up in a white sheet to try to fool somebody, are you going to be pulling around all this white other stuff, you know, whatever you want to call it, cheese wolf or something around the room that people can trip over? No, that's actually ectoplasm that goes back to the medium who is producing the materialization. And it goes back to the medium, and it's tied to the medium. And this ectoplasmic materialization then starts talking to the sitters. Now, the most impressive case is when the ectoplasmic materialization is recognized by one of the sitters. And this is where I come back to Alec Harris. His medium was born in Wales around 1890, I think 1889. He gave demonstrations in Wales. He never wanted to become a medium, but like you said, so happens to so many mediums, they eventually develop and become mediums. And he would go into trance, and at the circles he used to give, he would produce, and listen to this, Julia, it's so unbelievable, he would produce anywhere from 20 to 30 different materializations who would come, walk around, talk to the sitters, and many, many of them would be recognized by the sitters as being a deceased or passed over relative. And they would talk to each other, they would give details, and in my book I give many accounts by independent witnesses, independent people who've got, you know, impeccable credibility, were at those seances. But the incredible thing was that Alec Harris then, in the 1950s, he moved to South Africa with his wife because their son had immigrated to South Africa, was working there. So they decided they wanted to be near their son. So they moved to South Africa. And who do you think sat with Alec Harris? Our friends, Mickey and Sarah, sat with him back in the 1950s. So they described the sittings that they had with Alec Harris, and they describe exactly what I've read in his book, as written by Alec's wife, about these materializations that came up, that you can touch them. They were there. They would recognize deceased relatives. And Mickey and Sarah could never speak as highly as they did of this Alec Harris, of what a tremendous materialization medium he actually was. And what they saw and what the pictures that I have in my book of this medium that our friend Professor Allen took of these materializations, they said it's exactly the way they looked. That is the way materializations look. So there
we had the person on page 93, because there's somebody doing a full materialization now.
Yeah, that page 93, that's the medium. That is this medium that our Professor Jack Allen sat with. He is a different medium that he sat with, and he took photographs of in Johannesburg. That's page 91, page 93, where you see that ectoplasm, this sheet coming from his nose and forming over his body, which is exactly as my wife and I saw with Kitty Gordon. Kitty, in that circle, we sat with Mickey and Sarah. And then the next few pages are those full materializations produced by that medium. Those, and the one on the front cover and the next few pages, those are the materializations he produced and that our friend, Professor Allen, took of these materializations. I mean, these are genuine. He photographed them. And this man is not an idiot. He's as skeptical as I was that, you know, there must be an other explanation. He couldn't find one. He says, they are genuine. They are real. And then recently, and that's what really gave me the incentive to write my book, a few years ago, Tom Harrison, out of England, wrote a book about his mother, who was a materialization medium. And he wrote a book about all the materializations that happened in their little home circle. And he shows photographs. And I was kind enough from Tom to get the permission to take a few of those photographs and put them in my book. And you can see the similarity, although I think the pictures Professor Allen took, I think, are more impressive, actually, than than theirs. But again, it shows his mother, Minnie Harrison. It shows, again, the ectoplasm in her case came from her mouth, again, forming a sheet over her body. And it shows the full materializations coming from behind the black curtain. But also, a beautiful picture Tom had is how the trumpet moves around the room. And that is what I've always wanted to know. How does this trumpet that we saw standing on the floor that flies up and flies around the room? Well, there's a picture there, page 137, of the ectoplasm coming from Minnie Harrison's mouth and coming from her solar plexus. And the ectoplasm is tied to the trumpet. And that's how the spirit guides move the trumpet around. They manipulate the ectoplasm that comes from the medium, and that's how they fly the trumpet around. Because something has to move it. It doesn't move by itself. So that is how it is done. And then on a few pages later, I show again a very famous picture taken from a Jack Webber seance back in the 1940s. Again, the same thing. Ectoplasm coming from the medium's mouth, tied to a trumpet, and coming from a solar plexus, tied to another trumpet. That's how they move the trumpets around. So it is nothing unusual, but that is how it is done. And anybody who says this is nonsense has no understanding of the facts, have no understanding of the incredible evidence that is out there. But again, I warn you, and I can repeat this in my book, unfortunately, there have been a lot of frauds. There are magicians who sit there in the dark waving these trumpets around tied to a piece of string. That is totally different from what we experience and others experienced when you see a real trumpet flying around. The experience is a completely different one. So that's really what makes it so exciting, because that tells you two things. That moving trumpet tells you there must be a spirit guidance, a spirit intelligence guiding these trumpets to fly around. There's no way the medium who is in trance can move those trumpets and touch people sitting in the circle, if you see what I mean. That's just not possible. So you can see why I spend a lot of time in my book on materialization, because to me, that is the ultimate evidence. There's no doubt about it. If you see a materialization and one of the sitters recognizes it as a deceased relative, well, what other evidence can there be? And when that materialization and speaks to the sitter in the circle and tells him, you know, it is your grandfather, your father, your mother, or one of your children who's passed over, they talk about and they give him intimate details of exactly what, you know, what they know about their life, where they can tell the people and give the evidence necessary. To me, that is some of the ultimate proof there is. Very impressive. So, but people, just because there have been frauds, that doesn't mean everybody is a fraud. And that's why I repeat it over again in my book. And that's why the cases I've taken are those cases where the evidence is so strong and those particular mediums have never, ever been proven fraudulent. I must say one story about Alec Harris, because there were, of course, people who say it was fraud, he was just him dressed up in white sheets, which is nonsense. But there were some reporters actually once managed to get into one of his seances, one of his circles. And while this materialization was walking around the seance room, all in the red light, one of these reporters jumped on the ectoplasmic person. Now, you know, Juliet, what happened. It's a disaster for the medium, because his ectoplasm then shoots back into the medium, and Alec Harris was severely injured, and he was never the same again. And it's happened to other mediums, where people in the circle don't believe it. They think it's fraud. They either grab the trumpet, or they grab a materialization, and the ectoplasm shoots back into the medium, whether it's the solar plexus, the nose, the mouth, and the medium has been severely injured. And Alec Harris was sick for months. And the reporters realized that that they were dead wrong. But, you know, it was terrible, because there you had this tremendous medium who was harmed by one of these people who didn't believe it and who couldn't believe that these things are really there. And it was sad, but it's these things happen. There are people who just will not accept the reality of what is happening.
I would really like to study more the phenomena of ectoplasm and, you know, for example, that happening, how the sitter soul, you know, is physically injured by it. And of course now, you know, it's interesting because there's so many types of mediumship and manifestations and what have you, because people have had experiences where they, several weeks ago I had Chris Everard on the show. We were talking about his film called Spirit World. He was talking about experiences where, you know, people would see a friend or loved one and things would just start flying randomly around the room and what have you without being attached to ectoplasm, just these strange occurrences. And now, what's interesting, and I'm sure you've probably heard of this, the electronic voice phenomena, EVP,
yeah,
where, you know, entities are speaking through a device, a tape recorder or what have you. Then there's the other phone, and I can't remember the name, what they call it at the moment. Please forgive me on that. But it's actually sort of like a telephone to the spirit world. And I don't know, I want to say something like the funk box, but I'm not sure that that's accurate. So, but there is all this kind of stuff that I actually believe is legitimate. Now, being as sensitive myself, I get a strong sense straight away if someone is in earnest or not. And I really honestly have seen a lot of people who are in earnest, but various types of manifestations, as I said. So I wonder what sort of work or research, you know, have you done, have you looked into other types of manifestations as well, or has your focus mainly been ectoplasm, which is very interesting in and of itself?
One thing I've done a lot of reading on, because obviously these are the first, some of the first experiences we've had, besides, you know, sitting with Mickey and Sarah, and that's always, I've always been intrigued by channelers and by transmediums. Transmediums are not that easy nowadays to sit with anymore. Most of the psychics nowadays are channelers, you know, like the Jameson Proggs and the Harry and the John Edward, the ones who are on TV. And they're mainly channelers where they are conscious and they give evidence to the sitters. So I've often sat with channelers and to try to see, you know, what kind of evidence can you get? Are there really good ones? And unfortunately, but be honest, I have found about 80% of the time I did not get very good messages or useless messages, but there are those few cases which were just stunning. And I just mentioned one case, and this is for your sitters also, that to sort of tell them how to sit with a channeler. Because the key thing is, and this is where all the criticism comes about, is that most sitters, when they sit with a channeler or a psychic, that they give away a lot of information without them actually realizing it. And that there are a lot of fraudulent psychics, I'll use that word, who then, what they call cold read the sitter. This is what magicians love to use. They say, oh yeah, I can cold read anybody. Cold reading means that they can start talking to you, and before you know it, you've given them all the information they need to make it sound like they've given you a brilliant psychic demonstration. Anyway, this case that for us happened when we'd come back from South Africa, where we lived for 11 years, came back, and I was a professor at Cornell University. And there, we had just flown to Chicago, because we were moving from Cornell to Chicago, which is upstate New York, Cornell, going to Chicago. We came back that on a Sunday afternoon, and there happened to be a big sign. There was a psychic fair at the Holiday Inn right next to the airport. So we decided, oh, we'll go have a look to see if there's anything interesting there. So I went up to the organizer of the fair, and I said, well, could you tell me who your best psychic is? And he said, oh, they're all very good. I said, no, tell me, who is your best psychic? And he looks around, and he points at one lady, and he says, she is. So we waited. She was giving a reading to somebody. We waited. And then when she was free, we went there. And those days, it was, of course, it was $10. This was back in the 1960s. Early 1980s. So it was $10. We paid her. And the key is, when you sit with a psychic, not to say anything. Just say yes or no. And because most of them, if they aren't genuine, they'll try to draw the information out. Like you, Juliet, you are a psychic. You know you don't have to draw information out. But the ones who are not genuine, who are fraudulent, will try that. So the best thing is just to say yes or no, to show no emotion. And she just started talking. And she gave out fact after fact. The first thing she said was, you're moving to Chicago. She said, you're moving to the Midwest. Boom. My wife and I were just sitting there. We didn't know. We just arrived, you know, walked in, sat down, and the first thing she says is, you're moving to the Midwest. Well, that's where Chicago is. And then she says, you're not going to stay there very long. You're going to move to the Southwest. And then she went on, talked about a few other things, and then she turned around to me and said, oh, and by the way, don't take your car when you go to the Midwest. Now, there's a little story behind that, because this is what makes her so impressive. We were correct. We 2-3 months later, we moved to Chicago. And by the way, we were in Chicago for 1 year, and then we moved to Los Angeles, which is the Southwest. So exactly as she predicted. The funny thing, my wife and I had an argument about taking two cars when we went to Chicago. We had our regular car, the one she drove, and I had an old car, which I used to go around town. And I said, oh, let's take it along. And she said, no way, we're not going to do that. So we had an argument about that. So there the psychic said, don't take your car. I said, okay. So after the sitting, I decided I'll sell my car just before we left. A week before we left, I sold my car. And believe it or not, the day before we left, I got a phone call from the buyer. And he had gone about 15 miles outside of Ithaca, New York, where Cornell is, and the car had broken down. Can you believe it? If we had kept the car, we would have had the car break down when we were moving and driving with everybody to Chicago. What a disaster that would have been. Now, there is a psychic who very accurately predicted the future. She did, interestingly enough, she gave no evidence of any relatives in spirit, but she basically just talked about the family and about the future. Now, when you get things told to you about the future, that's what it tells you, at least the way I interpret it, that there must be some kind of purpose to life and some kind of predestination to life. I don't know what you see on that, Juliet, but that's sort of my thinking. Because if somebody can predict the future, somebody must have impressed her, and I believe it's someone in the spirit world, our guides or her guides, with things that are going to happen. But if they know what's going to happen, then there must be some kind of predestination. That's the way, to me, it seems like. But it also shows that there must be some type of spirit world, because if there's predestination, well, who predestines all that? If this life was meaningless and there was nothing there, why would there be predestination?
So, well, that's a very good point, too. And, you know, we've come to understand that the soul actually plans its life's path before birth. And, of course, being a multiple NDE, being one who's been on the other side, being one who's toggled and hung out on various dimensions throughout my life, none of this is strange to me, and it's all natural. It's always been natural to me. So then when I talk to my clients, though, and I tell them about a future event, I will indicate that some of this might be a situation that you can change. You know, there's some of it just might serve as a warning, and then there are other things that can't be changed. And it also allows people to be able to make a more intelligent decision. I sort of regard myself as like a cosmic radar screen, providing someone with an overview of things that are going to happen, things that are likely to happen, and things that are happening right now, and also I can tap into stuff that's happened in the past. And this is just really, there's a lot to this, and one of it is just being able to tap into someone's essence telepathically and picking up on some of these messages, picking up on what the soul is broadcasting, for lack of a better word, and then conveying that to the individual who's sitting with me. So, yeah, there is a lot to it, and there are differing opinions about what constitutes a good reading or how a good reading should be conducted. You know, when people come to me for a session, I always figure that they do have a reason. There's something they want to know about. So I do invite them to address what they want to find out about, but then also I just start channeling all of this information that indeed could not have been known by me beforehand. Now, I was wondering if you got the email I sent you about an article I wrote called ADC's Friends of the Factory.
Yeah, I found that very impressive. I mean, there's no doubt that you must be a tremendous psychic. Because like I said, I've sat with many, many channelers and psychics, and I said only 80% of the time I've gotten, you know, very not good information or no information at all. But from what I read about your experiences, Juliet, there's no doubt that you are one of the top psychics, that you get names, you see people, you see spirit entities, and you get the names, which is so accurate and so difficult, and so few psychics can do. So now I found that a very impressive article, and I didn't realize that you just see spirit entities all the time, you know, around you, and that is, to me, very impressive.
It was very interesting to go through that, and especially being in this old converted factory, and I thought, oh, blimey, there's all these entities there. Now, the difference is I'm not a trance medium, and I'm also not a materialist medium, or manifestation medium, I guess is the proper terminology. But I would just, I see things, I feel things, I hear things. So however the information comes through to me, then I'll just start conveying it. And I also shared in that article, which is going to be published in Josie Varga's book, Visits from Heaven, talking to a friend of mine in Nashville on the phone, and I just said, well, now I'm seeing this person, and I saw five people in a row, and they were all relatives of hers that she hadn't even known in the physical plane, because they transitioned before she was born or right after she was born. So she checked with her mom, and it all measured up. So I was very, very grateful for that, because I do want to, you know, be accurate. I want to share proper information. So, and it's almost like sometimes I wonder now if these beings might actually be able to project holograms. But I think the ectoplasm is sort of maybe like a hologram. In other words, someone seeing is believing kind of attitude. So I can see where the ectoplasm is valid in enabling people to see and not just hear messages.
I've always wondered about this. Don't really have a hard answer for this. The ectoplasm that you see with a materialization medium, that ectoplasm, when they allow you to touch it, can be hard, soft. It is, you know, you can really put your hands on it. When you see spirit forms, they are probably, you couldn't really touch them, I would believe. There must be something involved there, and it's, what it could be is that you can sense or see higher vibrations than others can. Remember, our vision and our instruments, scientific instruments, are limited only up to certain frequencies. Anything beyond that, everything beyond that, we cannot measure experimentally in the lab, and we cannot, as a human being, experimentally see, except that there are these psychics, like you are, where you can actually see these higher vibrations. So you can see these spirit entities. I don't think it's ectoplasm you're seeing. I think you're seeing these spirits in their spirit bodies. And just because they are at a higher frequency than anything else that we can measure, but you happen to have this ability to see them. So I think it's just a spirit body that you are seeing only certain people can see. I think it's different from ghosts, where ghosts are probably, there must be I don't think those are spirit bodies, but there must be some form or something different involved there, would be my guess. But what you see clearly, there's no doubt about it, I am convinced, is you see these spirit entities and the spirit bodies, which I think is very, very impressive. And
well, that's why I love speaking with physicists, too, because I've been, concluding the same analogy as well, that it is about frequency.
Yeah.
And I also firmly believe that all of us have got this innate ability to see into other dimensions, more and more so as we are being quickened now and moving out of this lower dense vibrational frequency into higher frequencies, where I think it's going to be very natural for everybody to be able to see into other dimensions.
That is obviously the hope, that one day, scientifically, we can develop the technology to measure higher frequencies. It's science is moving so fast, it is hopefully a possibility. And then everybody, like you said, would be able to see into the spirit world. So, it's very exciting. And I would love to, like, for a scientist like me who knows of his experienced phenomena, with a medium like you, like I said, you're very rare, believe me. I've been in London at the Spiritual Association, in South Africa, here in the U.S., many cities. I've sat with many channelers, psychics, and believe me, there are very few of them who can see what you do, where you actually see the spirit entities, get the names, can describe them clearly. That is very, very good. And but I say to your listeners, just because you might have had a bad sitting with somebody, don't give up, because there are good mediums. And you will get those experiences, but you don't give up. I always recommend, and I think you might be able to say the same thing to the listeners who might have had frustrating sittings with some psychics, could have an off day. I mean, there's a very famous case of a Mrs. Piper, you might remember. She lived from about 1860 to 1950. She was investigated by all the famous scientists back in the late 1890s, early 1900s. William James investigated her, Sir Oliver Lodge, William Hodgson. She was a psychic who went to trance, and she would give tremendous messages, names, everything. And all of a sudden, some days, she would have a sitting and bang, nothing. Her guide would come through, and he would try to get information from the sitter. He had nothing. So this is what I also write in my book, and I point out, that getting communication from the spirit world is not like a tap that you turn on and off, or like a light switch that you turn on and off. There are days when the psychic or the medium just gets nothing. I don't know if you have that, but I'm sure it must happen to you as well, that some days...
Oh, I've got to thank you so much for saying this, because in fact, one time I did give a reading in Nashville to someone, and this was very interesting. She said, it's my birthday, I want to get a message from my mom. And I just really wasn't getting anything from her mom to speak of. And I said, your mom is feeling really distant right now. And also I've got to let you know that in the spirit world, and again, I'm speaking from experiences of having been there through my near-death episodes. And here's a really good example. I even flatlined on my birthday in 1976. But I was not aware of it being 2nd February because, you know, names and dates in that context just don't exist, or we don't care about that because that's a completely different dimension.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I was describing her husband's father, who was getting ready to transition, to a T. Well, because I didn't give her the expected messages from her mom, she wanted a partial refund, and I just said, "All right, I'll give you that. I'm sorry you're disappointed, but and I'm so pleased that you pointed this out, because I told her, I said, we can't make someone come through. That individual is either available to come through or is not, and that is not within our control. We're just sort of like a switchboard operator, really.
Yeah, Julie, I'm so pleased you've had it as well, because I've written this several times in my book, that the best mediums have off days. And well, you know what it is? The conditions are either wrong. You might be mentally upset or not in a good frame of mind or slightly ill. It is so possible. Even we have had it with Mickey and Sarah, these mediums we sat with. She would go into trance every time. And some days, Brian would come out and have really nothing to say, and nothing happened. Or she was telling us things about a book she just read. Well, we knew she just read the book. So you know that she's just having an off day. So that's why I say to everybody, don't give up. Don't blame the medium. If the medium has an off day, come back another time and try again. And no matter how good you are, and I'm sure from what I've read about you, Juliet, you're fantastic. But even you will have off days, just like you've mentioned now. And for somebody to say, I want my money back, the best thing to say is, it is not like turning a switch on and off. Come back some other time, and hopefully we'll get a better result.
Well, that's a good idea, too. I just gave it back to her, and I gave her the explanation, too. But, it's so touching when there is money involved. And, of course, I do this as a service to help people. But also, you know, supporting myself in the process. But another interesting example of this is that I was up in Maine and I was doing a whole slew of readings one day. I'd just been booked from beginning to end, and I was just so on it with all of these people. Then a woman came in, and I just got a heavy vibe straight away, and I thought, uh-oh. And I was having the hardest time. I just couldn't get to the phone with this lady. And finally, I turned to her and I said, you've got a wall around you 10 feet deep. When you get rid of that wall, then I'll happily be able to read you. But right now, there's something in you that's saying, I don't want to be seen. And she actually, a few weeks later, apologized to me and said, Juliet, you were right. I did have a wall around me. And I said, because, normally... And those things are really off with me. And I knew that I was on that day. I was in a very good way. But this lady had the wall around her, and I always maintain giving a reading is a two-way street.
Yeah.
It's not just about the psychic or medium performing, as it were. It is about everyone involved doing their part.
Exactly. And also for the sitter, I recommend, first of all, like you said, you don't put up a wall and says, I'm not going to think of anything, or just keep, you know, like you said, just put like a wall around you. Also, don't sit there thinking, I want my grandmother to come, I want my grand, or I want my mother to come and give me a message. When you start doing that, it's not going to happen.
It's exactly.
Exactly. You want to have, just sit down, relax, have an open mind, and let the medium do the medium's business. And if it is a bad sitting, accept it. Like I said, this Mrs. Piper, for something like 60 years, gave the best messages. And there are times when people in disgust walked out because it was garbage. It was nothing. But that's what happens. There's nothing you can do about it. But I want to mention one thing, since you talk about out of near-death experiences. I've never had one, but I'd like to mention something my father had. Because my father was a total atheist. He didn't believe. He was a scientist. He said, there's nothing. You die, you're dead, and you're gone. And he didn't believe when my wife and I, you know, we were doing all these investigations, all this stuff. He said it was all nonsense. Seriously, that was my father. So when he was about 72, he was living, he had moved back to Holland, and we were in the U.S., and he had to have heart surgery. So he needed a bypass, and he needed a valve replaced. So he went into surgery, and they fixed him up. They wheeled him out of surgery, and one of the stitches broke. And he flatlined. So he was basically, they had to rush him back into the operating room. And he was dead for about 3 or 4 minutes. But they managed to fix him up. He recovered. And a few months later, my sister, who lives in Holland, when she was visiting him in a hospital, he told her, he said, he just had to tell her this experience. That while he was there, you know, coming out of the emergency, out of the room, he sort of didn't really know what had happened, but he said what had happened to him was that all of a sudden he saw this tunnel of white light, and he went to the end of it, and there were some people there, and they said to him, no, you can't come here. Go back. It's not your time yet. So we had to go back. He told my sister that. He never told me that because I didn't think he wanted to admit to me that, hey, maybe there was something there. But there it is, someone who is a total, complete atheist having a near-death experience. That's intriguing, isn't it?
Well, it is, and Howard Storm is another good example of that. He was an avowed atheist, and then he had a near-death experience, and then he became a Christian after that, because that was actually what he'd been trained to believe in. So when he didn't have, when he found that the atheist mindset was erroneous, then he defaulted back into the Christian belief. So, and to me, it's just very obvious that when we do transition to the other side, we are looking at various dimensions. And so that's what your 4D experience, that's what all of us experience. And I think it's really daft to think that, you know, I refer to it as the flat earth mindset, where people are still believing that the earth is flat.
Yeah.
To think that there's only one dimension of existence, to think that there's only life on one planet, you know, this is really ludicrous to me. It's total nonsense. So in my way of thinking, all of us NDEers and mediums and psychics who are really proving the afterlife, the validity of telepathy, that we are interdimensional and that we do communicate mind to mind, and in fact that is the way we do communicate on the other side.
Yeah.
And that, for example, somebody like me, I had perfect sight whilst on the other side. I had 360-degree vision, whereas on this plane, I'm diagnosed as legally blind. So it obviously wasn't eyes or brain that was seeing or having the conscious experience. So there's a lot to this, and I'm very excited that more and more people like you, physicists, who are coming forward and saying, yes, this is real, that there is a beautiful harmonizing and marriage between metaphysics and science, because I think the true science, as opposed to the reductionist, materialistic mindset of scientists, really does validate all of this that we've been talking about, and I think it's wonderful. Now, we're just about, my goodness, we've almost gone an hour already. Is there any engagements coming up that you'd like to share with us, Dan? Any speaking engagements, anything that you would like to share with our listeners before we sign off?
There's something coming up on the web, another interview that's coming up about my book, and I'm just not sure where to find it, but it will be posted. I think I have a web page from my publisher, but I'm not sure when that is coming up. I have given some lectures, mainly here. I live in the LA area, Los Angeles area. I have given a few lectures, and I plan a few more. But it's to tell you the truth, it is not that easy to get speaking experiences. Because a lot of people, when they hear the word ectoplasm and materialization, they all of a sudden ridicule you, ostracize you, and think you're a nutcase. It is so sad. Like for my book,
yes,
do you think it would be easy to get a book review? No, very difficult to get a book review. And the fear is that those people who do book reviews, a lot of them are afraid to do a review, like I said, on something that involves ectoplasm and materializations, because they know nothing about it. And if they write something positive, they might be criticized by their colleagues. And if they criticize it, they might be criticized by others who say, you don't know what you're talking about. So they'd rather not touch it. And it is so sad. And there's so many scientists. You know, when at the university, when I was at Cornell University, I mentioned this to a few scientists. Some of them actually were interested, some of them were agnostic, and some of them told me you're a nutcase and they ridiculed you. And the most famous physicists have said the same thing has happened to them. And it is so sad that when you do present evidence, photographic evidence, numerous cases, there's still people who are willing to label you a nutcase or ridicule you without really willing to investigate it. And that's what I write in my book also. Have an open mind. Investigate it. Don't criticize just because you don't believe it. That doesn't mean it isn't true. Investigate it and have an open mind. But it's disappointing that it's difficult to get book reviews on a book like this.
That is interesting, and I'd like to think that in this day and age, all of this is starting to change. But I understand what you're saying, and I really commend you for being undaunted and by being true to yourself and to the message and the calling here. Because, you know what, we're going to show them, after all, that the earth is not flat.
Yeah.
And that we do have a myriad of dimensions that life exists on, and all the dimensions are different frequencies, and I know that you understand that.
Yep.
So I think actually we are starting to make some headway, and I'm very grateful for that, and I'm grateful for people like you who've had the heart and the nerve to come forward, come what may, and speak your truth. And indeed, it is true, especially according to my experience as well. It's so lovely to have you. And we are at the end of this transmission of For the Light already, but it's been wonderful having you, Jan. We've been speaking with Jan Vandesande, excuse me for blundering that, the author of Life After Death, Some of the Best Evidence. And he is a PhD physicist and showing some really clear evidence of not only the afterlife, but after-death communications and contacts. So this is really, really a powerful book, and I'd like to encourage you, and definitely I'm going to put this on towardthelight.org. I'll have your books. It's already on here, what am I saying? So that people can see it. It's excellent.
Yeah, and it is available.
So
they can order it from Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, so it is. You can order it from the Internet. To get it into a bookstore, again, is very difficult. You know, when you're dealing with ectoplasm and materialization, I tried Barnes & Noble to get them to stock it. And they looked to say, oh, no one's interested. You won't sell more than a few hundred copies at most. That was sort of their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe it, Juliet? They've decided what people should or shouldn't read, whereas they're not willing to give them the open mind. But I appreciate you having me, and I hope some people will read it and just open their minds. And the work you're doing is so great already, is to just help people to realize there is another dimension there.
Well, thank you so much, Sam. And this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will speak to you next week on another transmission of Toward the Light. Blessings and light to all.